The Tom Woods Show, episode 2173.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I'm giving away three free courses from my Liberty Classroom. One of them is ex-Marxist Michael Rechtenwald teaching you about critical theory so you can understand leftism and fight it better, as well as our course on how Alexander Hamilton screwed up America and the history of the conservative and libertarian movements. Check it out at 3freecourses.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Very glad to be joined once again by our old friend, Tom Mullen, who hosts Tom Mullen Talks Freedom and who's been in the liberty movement for quite a long time, as long as I can remember, and I've been around for quite a while. And we're going to talk today about the phrase, all men are created equal. And we're going to talk also about the word and the concept inequality and try and get to the bottom of what indeed that meant. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Tom.
I love that when you and I talk, it's always a wildly different topic each time. I think last time it was about the problems with socialist Christmas, like whatever, people's bad economic ideas and stuff like that. And now here we are talking about Thomas Jefferson, who, by the way, is somebody I very much enjoy talking about, who's an interesting guy who, you know, is in some ways hard to classify politically because I agree with him on a lot. And then sometimes he'll throw me a curveball and I'll say, oh, why did you have to go and say that? You know, and then Michael Malice, who doesn't like Thomas Jefferson at all, will then hone in on those particular things that Jefferson said, rub them in my face. And I say, oh, no, nobody's perfect, Mr. I love Alexander Hamilton. You know, so we want to talk about the thing that I think most people know about Jefferson. And as I had to slow down, as I said, most people know, because as I've seen after reading Brian Kaplan's book, The Case Against Education, and seeing how American adults have done on tests of extremely basic historical knowledge, you know, like was the Revolutionary War before or after the Civil War, things like that, I can no longer say with confidence something most Americans know about Jefferson. Let's say of the Americans who know who Thomas Jefferson was, a good chunk of them know about all men are created equal. And that has been a controversial phrase, not just in our day, but even at the time. You can find people in history who said, well, this is clearly not a true statement. What is he driving at with this? So we want to spend a little time clarifying that today. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about maybe why it is that people have a kind of knee-jerk response when they hear the word equality. Some people hear it and they think this is the driving force behind everything I believe in. And other people hear it and they just think this is a recipe for ongoing revolution and state domination of society. What's going on there in this one innocent-sounding word?
Well, I think that one word was used very differently at almost the same time over in France than the way Jefferson meant it. And in France, the French Revolution that I see inspired mostly by the ideas of Jean-Jacques Rousseau was based on this idea that equality was a goal that the government has to achieve. And if you read Rousseau, he has all these ideas about what life was like before there were governments and that we were basically these angels, kind of Adams and Eves, not even knowing right from wrong. And the great scourge of the state of nature was that we started acquiring private property and then inequalities began to accumulate between people. And the reason that you need to have a society and a government with this unlimited democracy was to make us all equal again. And I think that's still the left today. I mean, that's what you hear them saying. And it's been taken to a ridiculous extent. But really, that's the logical end of this thinking. It's not just that now we have to all have the same amount of money, which is never going to happen, which never has happened. But even the experience of life has to be identical, whether you're between men and women, between people of different races or cultures. Everybody in the world has to experience life exactly the same. And I should say, regardless of their preferences, it's just insane. And I think that's what people think they're hearing from the Declaration. And I think that's a much different idea of equality than what Jefferson talked about.
There is this quotation from Rousseau in his Discourse on the Origin of Inequality, where he says, "The first man who, having enclosed a piece of ground, bethought himself of saying, 'This is mine,' and found people simple enough to believe him, was the real founder of civil society. From how many crimes, wars, and murders, from how many horrors and misfortunes, might not anyone have saved mankind by pulling up the stakes or filling up the ditch and crying to his fellows, 'Beware of listening to this imposter. You are undone if you once forget that the fruits of the earth belong to us all and the earth itself to nobody.'" Well, that's a really stirring little statement there. But what does that mean in practice, to not be able to say, "This is mine"? You know, what does that actually mean? Somebody has to decide what's to be done with that plot of land. Are we going to take a vote of billions of people 24 hours a day to decide what's done with every single plot of land? No, obviously somebody has to decide. And if it's not going to be an individual property owner, well, it's probably going to be a violent coercive apparatus, right? With maybe not such cute little results, you know, as cute as this statement is.
Yeah, and Rousseau's answer was, well, it's the whole community. It's this absolute democracy. He even goes so far, and I'm not sure if it's that one or the social contract, to say that, you know, if his preferences or his opinion goes against the majority, that's how he knows he's wrong. There's just a minority opinion can never be right. And this is another thing that I think you hear from the left, the modern left, American and otherwise, that democracy, they're always talking about our democracy. But we don't have a democracy, and it's not just a semantic difference. We have a system that has a little bit of democracy just to decide who makes the rules. And then we got all these anti-democratic institutions to protect us from it, basically. I mean, the veto power, the bicameral legislature, the Bill of Rights itself is all the democratically elected legislator won't do this, and they won't do that, and they won't do this other thing either. These are all anti-democratic institutions, and to call the whole thing with its smidgen of democracy in there, our democracy, again, that's almost like Orwellian mind control. It's just no such thing.
Now, we're going to get in a little while to what Jefferson meant by that controversial phrase, let's say, or by that widely misunderstood phrase. But for now, I want to just dig a little bit deeper for a minute. The thing about this word, there are a couple things. Number one, because as you're kind of suggesting, in many of the senses in which people mean the word equality, it is an unreachable goal. Well, that's exactly the kind of thing that states love. They love unreachable goals because it means they'll just have permanent power. So they love a drug war. They love a war on terror. You know, unreachable goals, impossible to accomplish, to ever say, okay, it's all finished, we're going to stop. Well, likewise for equality. But then the other thing I want to say about it is a word that just seems to take on a life of its own. So you could say something like, well, I believe in equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. Okay. And then the left comes along and says, but in order to have equality of opportunity, I mean, surely you don't think somebody born in the projects has really equal opportunities with somebody born in some mansion somewhere. So if you really believe in equality of opportunity, then we need the following other things too. And then once you reach that, there's always some other thing. And it just builds upon itself and builds upon itself. And people keep getting off the train at different stops. You know, they'll say, well, I only wanted equality to mean this. Well, okay, but we intend to ride this thing all the way to the end here. And so it's something that on some level, we believe in equality, right? As libertarians, there's a way in which we believe in it. And what we believe is not altogether dissimilar from what Andrew Jackson believed when the slogan of the Jacksonians was equal rights. What they meant by equal rights was that nobody gets special privileges. And they thought that was the working man's platform. Not that the working man gets special privileges, but that nobody gets anything special from the coercive apparatus, you know, from the state itself. And that's what makes us equal, that we all enjoy the liberty of not being put upon violently by other people. That was what they meant. And if to that extent, I can agree with it. And likewise, I can agree with equality in a functional sense. Like, if I can't do a certain thing, why should a bunch of people calling itself the state be able to do that thing? That would be unequal. Why do those people have powers that I don't have? In that sense, I can also believe in equality. But once you go beyond it, it just has a life of its own somehow.
Yeah. And the thing that I guess nobody ever brings up to me that, you know, when you say equal, that means that on either side of the equal sign, the things are identical. But the fact that they may not be identical on either side of the equal, that they're not equal, doesn't mean that one is superior and one is inferior. In other words, you could have two people with completely different circumstances, lives, and outcomes, but that doesn't make one superior over the other. But I think the left always ultimately looks at the money totals, you know, the economic outcomes, and says, oh, this is terrible, these income inequalities that we have. And I also said, they never take into account someone's personal preferences. I personally did not want to be a billionaire, okay? Because to be a billionaire, you have to be single-mindedly focused on this one specific thing that 24/7, that's all you do, that's all you eat, drink, and sleep. Now, I'm not saying I had the ability to be a billionaire, but even if I did, I have lots of interests and I like to do things like this. And, you know, that does not comport with being Bill Gates or Elon Musk. So, you know, even personal preferences, and this comes into play when they talk about, well, there's not enough women going into STEM education courses. Yeah, well, they're choosing not to. It's not that they can't do it. The door is open. What more can we do to make it, you know, easy for them to go and apply for these things? They're applying for different things. They have a right to do that. And we shouldn't consider that, you know, some kind of injustice that someone chose maybe to be a school teacher or something else.
All right, let's shift over now to Thomas Jefferson. What does he mean by all men are created equal?
Well, as I've always said, Jefferson and most of the 1776ers were all channeling John Locke, at least at that time. And I think he got this either, you know, Jefferson may have lifted it out of the Virginia Declaration of Rights, where he has the same statement. But it ultimately comes from a passage from Locke. And if you don't mind, I could read this one. It's how he starts his second treatise of government. He says, "To understand political power right and derive it from its original, we must consider what state all men are naturally in, and that is a state of perfect freedom to order their actions and dispose of their possessions and persons as they think fit within the bounds of the law of nature without asking leave or depending upon the will of any other man. A state also of equality wherein all the power and jurisdiction is reciprocal, no one having more than another, there being nothing more evident than that the creatures of the same species and rank, promiscuously born to all the same advantages of nature and the use of the same faculties, should also be equal amongst one another without subordination or subjection, unless the Lord and Master of them all should, by any manifest declaration of his will, set one above another." And he goes on. So the only way in which we are equal, and we're equal at the moment we're born in this way, is that no one has any inherent right to rule another person. And that's the end of it. There's no more equality. And of course, Thomas Jefferson and John Locke and George Mason and all the rest of them understood that people have different abilities. They're not all the same height. They're not all as smart or as talented at other things. But they thought in this one narrow way that nobody is so much different from anybody else. We're all promiscuously born to the same circumstances that they have this inherent right to rule another person. And really, if you don't agree that we're all equal in that way, you have no case for freedom, because it's because of that very limited sense in which we're equal that consent to any kind of government is required.
So this is very similar then to what I was saying before, that I was talking about is like a functional idea of equality, that there's no particular inherent reason that person A should be able to do things that person B would get put in jail for. So person A in normal society couldn't come over and demand 40% of person B's income. We would not tolerate that. But for some reason, there are people who think, well, but person A is in some kind of superior natural position to person B and is rightly ruling over him. And Jefferson's denying that, saying that we're equal in that sense. So the only thing that Jefferson needed to do if he, in his heart of hearts, aspired to be a 21st century ANCAP, was simply to go one step farther than that, which was to say, and just because a group of people cast a vote doesn't magically bestow, there's no magic dust in the world that suddenly bestows upon person A these powers to boss person B around. If he didn't have them before, a bunch of people, you know, officially designating him to have those powers don't give him the powers either.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, when you read this treatise by Locke that Jefferson late in his life said is the whole basis for American natural rights and liberty, this statement that he makes at the beginning, nobody has this inherent right, leads to the idea that then nobody could be governed unless they actually consent to it. And there's a point in the treatise where he says, and how is this consent to be obtained? And kind of people like us are on the edge of their seat. Yeah, how do they get that consent?
Yeah, yeah, let's hear it. And it's always a letdown.
Yeah, and then, you know, he fumbles the ball. I've always said that John Locke, you know, got the ball from the goal line to the opponent's 10, and Murray Rothbard ran it into the end zone, because it's like, you know, not to, you know, scoring from the red zone is difficult, so I'm not diminishing what Rothbard did, but Locke gets all the way up to that, and he says, well, since we're never going to get unanimity, we're just going to have to have a majority vote. And you're going, what? That's the consent? But it is an important point that however flawed and imperfect representative government turned out to be, that at least there is this acknowledgement, you know, that one does have to consent, however ridiculous a vote is to substitute for that. And I think that is the basis for what Rothbard did in saying, okay, what's the problem here? There it is, that no majority vote can substitute for individual consent. And that's really the only difference that I see between us and the fathers. And when you read what comes to mind, one other thing, in Samuel Adams' Rights of the Colonists in 1772, he makes a statement to the effect of, and I can't find it and talk at the same time, but that all men can stay in the state of nature as long as they wish to. And I'm here, okay, Sam, that sounds good.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think they realize sometimes the implications of some of those statements.
Right, right, right. Hey, folks, quick message from Moll Woods here. If you are looking to add Bitcoin to your retirement account and thinking about the long haul, then the best and easiest way to do that is with BitTrust IRA. BitTrust IRA helps you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. It stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. I've often said that if Bitcoin is ever to gain more widespread acceptance, it's going to have to be more user-friendly, and BitTrust IRA could not be easier to use. So go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners, a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods, bittrustira.com/woods. Now, I look at this question, and I think what's going on is that some of these 18th century thinkers are uncomfortable with the idea of some people rule and other people are ruled. I think some of them, they really are stumbling toward individualism, but they also believe there has to be a state. But if there's a state, then that's some people ruling and other people are ruled. So they have to somehow portray it as you're really ruling yourself, or everyone has consented to this. So they can at least in some way defer to individual sovereignty. At least they can say that theoretically they've accounted for it. But when it comes time to try to do that, they fumble around with social contract theories that don't hold up, or they say that, well, it's impractical to get everybody's, well, but it's a moral imperative that everybody be treated as an end in himself, and to say, well, it'd be inconvenient to ask everybody, and we know we need the state, so we're just going to chuck all this out and come up with this ridiculous theory in place of it. I think then you get to a Rothbard who has theorized about a society that functions without a state, and he's therefore fearless in taking that step and saying, yes, we cannot call it consent when we take a vote. Some people don't even vote. We cannot call that consent. And so we cannot really have the basis for a state in some kind of social contract mythology. But that's okay because the state is merely parasitic and we've been propagandized into thinking we can't live without it. We can't live without it, so now let's go to the next step.
Yeah, and the extent to which the founders were close to us in thinking, not in practice, obviously, all the time, but in thinking, when you think about Thomas Paine's treatise, Common Sense, now this is the document that I was taught convinced the critical mass of people to support independence. And so the whole first part of it, he goes through his own little treatise on what's the purpose of government and how should it be constituted. And he makes the statement that government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. So he's calling it evil. He just thinks it's necessary. And I think that's where they all were, that, look, no one's going to be able to have all these liberty and possessions that we talk about unless we have something there to protect it. And then, of course, Jefferson had his flaws with education, thinking the same thing about education. He often called John Locke one of the three greatest men who ever lived. The other two were Isaac Newton and Francis Bacon. The Bacon one is the one that bothers me because I think he thought he was building Solomon's house from New Atlantis with his University of Virginia. But you know, I think that when you were breaking new ground, and they were breaking tremendous ground, that there's only so far you can go. There's only so much you can imagine. I mean, there was a long time after I believed all this, I still was clinging to intellectual property rights until Stephen Kinsella came along and convinced me otherwise. So it's, you know, you can believe in these principles and just not be able to apply them, especially probably in places you're emotionally attached to.
Well, I think another word I think has been implicit in this conversation that's been hard to pin down, even though it, just because it's hard to pin down doesn't mean it doesn't have real content. It just means people either are confused about it deliberately or by accident, is the word rights. Because you very often hear people saying they have a right to this or that, but they have no theory of rights. They have no idea why such a thing would be a right and something else wouldn't be. I think we have probably the best thought out theory of rights because it's very precise and you can instantly identify whether something really is a right or not. But that, just like equality, is a word that is not, for most people, really tethered to anything. It's just a bunch of desires. But as Thomas Sowell said, everything desirable is not a right.
Yeah, you know, I don't think the founders did us a favor the way they phrased what they did. Now, assuming that I'm correct, that most of this comes from John Locke, I like the way John Locke did it when he said that the reason people form societies is for the mutual preservation of their lives, liberties, and estates, which I call by the general name property. The great and chief end, therefore, of men's uniting into commonwealths, putting themselves under government, is preservation of their property. And then after he says that, that's all he says, property, property, property. He never says life, liberty, and property because life and liberty are part of this expansive idea. And I actually did an episode on my own podcast called You Have a Right to What You Own and Nothing More, because once you start thinking of it and just using that word, then right to healthcare obviously is an absurdity where right to liberty is not. But instead of having to think and argue about these myriad rights we have, I think it would have been better if the tradition went on just calling it property, and that makes it nice and clean.
And of course, that's what Rothbard tried to do, was to situate rights in the context of property. That in a way, there isn't really, strictly speaking, a quote, right to free speech, because I can't go to your house and exercise my right to free speech, because you could just, if I went to your house, Tom, and I just harangued you for 2 hours, first of all, that would show you were a very, very indulgent man. But you would probably have thrown me out long before that, and I would have no standing to say to you, but what about my right to free speech? What you have is a right to property. You know, you have a right to acquire property. You have a right to acquire paper and ink and a press and print stuff and distribute it to anyone who wants to see it and to speak in any place that will have you, including your own property. But there's no abstract right to these things. You know, in a sense, I have a right to lie down on a couch, but I don't have the right to do that in the middle of your yard. So again, it has to do with property. This is a central thing. And when you separate it from property, you inevitably lead to confusion. Update us on what's going on in Tom Mullen's world in terms of what you're producing and doing these days?
Well, I just passed the 100th episode of the podcast, which is a little less impressive being on a podcast and it's 2000 somewhere, but I've done that and I've started Substacks and Patreons and people are joining up and it's going pretty well and I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'd been in the corporate world for all my life after I got out of school and just been really doing that on my own these days.
Wow. Okay. Well, very good. Well, I'm going to put on the show notes page. In fact, you send me the links when you have a minute and I'll put on the show notes page the various links to things that you're doing, like your podcast, Substack, all that stuff. I'll put that up at tomwoods.com/2173 and people can check out Tom Mullen. So we'll have a big Tom Mullen smorgasbord at tomwoods.com/2173. So don't forget, send me that stuff because I'll forget because, you know, I'm an old man, unlike Tom Mullen. Actually, I have no idea. I don't know what our relative ages are.
I was born in 65. Help was the number one song. So I'm a little ahead of you on the church.
All right. So
song.
You're more likely to forget to send me the things than I am to post them.
No, I'm very confident I won't forget.
Yeah, no. That's right. If there's one thing I'm good at, it's promoting myself to others. So I never have to worry about that either. All right. Well, Tom, thank you for this important clarification because so many people wonder about this. And then, I don't know, do I have to be anti-Jefferson because of this? What did he mean by this after all? But it turns out it actually makes perfect sense. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate being on.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. You know, I just realized that when I recorded this, I was in New York. I needed to get a couple of episodes recorded because I'm doing some traveling. I needed to get them out there. So I did this one a bit in advance. And I didn't realize that by the time it aired, it would actually be my 50th birthday. So I'm releasing this on August 1st, 2022. I share the same birthday as Jerry Garcia, by the way, for what that's worth. But so I have officially hit 50. Huh. Well, for any of you who listen to these episodes as they come out, I'll remind you that it being August 1st, we've reopened the doors to the Tom Woods School of Life, but not for very long, not for very long. Then they'll close again for another 6 months. So go check it out, tomschooloflife.com. We're doing really, really important and amazing things in there. And I would love to have you be part of that. So the website, once again, tomschooloflife.com. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.